The situation of the party was now lamentable indeed. In the heart of an unknown wilderness, at a loss what route to take, ignorant of their distance from the place of their destination, and with no human being near them from whom counsel might be taken. Their stock of provisions was reduced to 5 days' allowance, and famine stared them in the face. It was therefore more perilous to keep together than to separate. The goods and provisions, except a small supply for each man, were concealed in caches, holes dug in the earth, and the party were divided into several small detachments, which started off in different directions, keeping the mouth of the Columbia in view as their ultimate point of destination. From this post, they were still distant nearly 1,000 miles, although this fact was unknown to them at the time. On the 21st of January, after a series of almost incredible adventures, the division in which Mr. Hunt enrolled himself struck the waters of the Columbia, some distance below the junction of its two great branches, Lewis and Clark Rivers, and not far from the influx of the Walla Walla. Since leaving the Cauldron Lynn, they had toiled 240 miles through snowy wastes and precipitous mountains, and 6 months had now elapsed since their departure from the Arickara village on the Missouri, their whole route from that point, according to their computation, having been 1,751 miles. Some vague intelligence was now received in regard to the other division of the party, and also of the settlers at the mouth of the Columbia. On the 31st, Mr. Hunt reached the falls of the river and encamped at the village of Wishram. Here were heard tidings of the massacre on board the Tonquin. On the 5th of February, having procured canoes with much difficulty, the adventurers departed from Wishram, and on the 15th, sweeping round an intervening cape, they came in sight of the long-desired Astoria. Among the first to greet them on their landing were some of their old comrades, who had parted from them at the Cauldron Lynn, and who had reached the settlement nearly a month before. Mr. Crooks and John Day, being unable to get on, had been left with some Indians in the wilderness. They afterward came in. Carrière, a voyageur who was also abandoned through the sternest necessity, was never heard of more. Jean-Baptiste Prévost, likewise a voyageur, rendered frantic by famine, had been drowned in the Snake River. All parties had suffered the extremes of weariness, privation, and peril. They had traveled from St. Louis 3,500 miles. Let us now return to Mr. Astor. As yet he had received no intelligence from the Columbia, and had to proceed upon the supposition that all had gone as he desired. He accordingly fitted out a fine ship, the Beaver, of 490 tons. Her cargo was assorted with a view to the supply of Astoria, the trade along the coast, and the wants of the Russian Fur Company. There embarked in her for the settlement a partner, 5 clerks, 15 American laborers, and 6 Canadian voyageurs. Mr. John Clark, the partner, was a native of the United States, although he had passed much of his life in the Northwest, having been employed in the fur trade since the age of 16. The clerks were chiefly young American gentlemen of good connections. Mr. Astor had selected this reinforcement with the design of securing an ascendancy of American influence at Astoria, and rendering the association decidedly national. This, from the peculiar circumstances of the case, he had been unable to do in the commencement of his undertaking. Captain Soule, the commander of the Beaver, was directed to touch at the Sandwich Islands, to inquire about the fortunes of the Tonquin and ascertain, if possible, whether the settlement had been effected at Astoria. If so, he was to enlist as many of the natives as possible and proceed. He was to use great caution in his approach to the mouth of the Columbia. If everything was found right, however, he was to land such part of his cargo as was intended for the post, and to sail for New Archangel with the Russian supplies. Having received furs in payment, he would return to Astoria, take in the peltries there collected, and make the best of his way to Canton. These were the strict letter of his instructions, a deviation from which was subsequently the cause of great embarrassment and loss, and contributed largely to the failure of the whole enterprise. The Beaver sailed on the 10th of October, 1811, and after taking in 12 natives at the Sandwich Islands, reached the mouth of the Columbia in safety on the 9th of May, 1812. Her arrival gave life and vigor to the establishment and afforded means of extending the operations of the company and founding a number of interior trading posts. It now became necessary to send dispatches overland to Mr. Astor at New York, an attempt at so doing having been frustrated some time before by the hostility of the Indians at Wishram. The task was confided to Mr. Robert Stewart, who, though he had never been across the mountains, had given evidence of his competency for such undertakings. He was accompanied by Ben Jones and John Day, Kentuckians, André Valar and Francis Leclerc, Canadians, and two of the partners, Messieurs McClellan and Crooks, who were desirous of returning to the Atlantic States. This little party set out on the 29th of June, and Mr. Irving accompanies them in detail throughout the whole of their long and dangerous wayfaring. As might be expected, they encountered misfortunes still more terrible than those before experienced by Mr. Hunt and his associates. The chief features of the journey were the illness of Mr. Crooks and the loss of all the horses of the party through the villainy of the Upsarokas. This latter circumstance was the cause of excessive trouble and great delay. On the 30th of April, however, the party arrived in fine health and spirits at St. Louis, having been 10 months in performing their perilous expedition. The route taken by Mr. Stewart coincided nearly with that of Mr. Hunt, as far as the Wind River Mountains. From this point, the former struck somewhat to the southeast, following the Nebraska to its junction with the Missouri. War having at length broken out between the United States and England, Mr. Astor perceived that the harbor of New York would be blockaded and the departure of the annual supply ship in the autumn prevented. In this emergency, he wrote to Captain Soule, the commander of the Beaver, addressing him at Canton. The letter directed him to proceed to the factory at the mouth of the Columbia with such articles as the establishment might need, and to remain there subject to the orders of Mr. Hunt. In the meantime, nothing had yet been heard from the settlement. Still, not discouraged, Mr. A. determined to send out another ship, although the risk of loss was so greatly enhanced that no insurance could be effected. The Lark was chosen, remarkable for her fast sailing. She put to sea on the 6th of March, 1813, under the command of Mr. Northrop, her mate, the officer first appointed to command her having shrunk from his engagement. Within a fortnight after her departure, Mr. A. received intelligence that the Northwest Company had presented a memorial to Great Britain stating the vast scope of the contemplated operations at Astoria, expressing a fear that unless crushed, the settlement there would affect the downfall of their own fur trade, and advising that a force be sent against the colony. In consequence, the frigate Phoebe was ordered to convoy the armed ship Isaac Todd, belonging to the Northwest Company, and provided with men and munitions for the formation of a new establishment. They were directed to proceed together to the mouth of the Columbia, capture or destroy whatever American fortress they should find there, and plant the British flag on its ruins. Upon this matter's being represented to our government, the frigate Adams, Captain Crane, was detailed for the protection of Astoria, and Mr. A. proceeded to fit out a ship called the Enterprise, to sail in company with the frigate and freighted with additional supplies. Just, however, as the two vessels were ready, a reinforcement of seamen was wanted for Lake Ontario, and the crew of the Adams were necessarily transferred to that service. Mr. A. was about to send off his ship alone when a British force made its appearance off the Hook, and New York was effectually blockaded. The Enterprise, therefore, was unloaded and dismantled. We now return to the Beaver. This vessel, after leaving at Astoria that portion of her cargo destined for that post, sailed for New Archangel on the 4th of August, 1812. She arrived there on the 19th, meeting with no incidents of moment. A long time was now expended in negotiations with the drunken governor of the Russian fur colony, one Count Voronoff, and when they were finally completed, the month of October had arrived. Moreover, in payment for his supplies, Mr. Hunt was to receive seal skins, and none were on the spot. It was necessary, therefore, to proceed to a seal-catching establishment belonging to the Russian company at the island of St. Paul, in the Sea of Kamchatka. He set sail for this place on the 4th of October, after having wasted 45 days at New Archangel. He arrived on the 31st of the month, by which time, according to his arrangement, he should have been back at Astoria. Now occurred great delay in getting the peltries on board, every pack being overhauled to prevent imposition. To make matters worse, the Beaver one night was driven offshore in a gale and could not get back until the 13th of November. Having at length taken in the cargo and put to sea, Mr. Hunt was in some perplexity as to his course. The ship had been much injured in the late gale, and he thought it imprudent to attempt to make the mouth of the Columbia in this boisterous time of the year. Moreover, the season was already much advanced, and should he proceed to Astoria as originally intended, he might arrive at Canton so late as to find a bad market. Unfortunately, therefore, he determined to go at once to the Sandwich Islands, there await the arrival of the annual ship from New York, take passage in her to the settlement, and let the Beaver proceed on her voyage to China. It is but justice to add that he was mainly induced to this course by the timid representations of Captain Soule. They reached Oahu in safety, where the ship underwent the necessary repairs, and again put to sea on the 1st of January 1813, leaving Mr. Hunt on the island. At Canton, Captain Soule found the letter of Mr. Astor giving him information of the war, and directing him to convey the intelligence to Astoria. He wrote a reply in which he declined complying with these orders, saying that he would wait for peace, and then return home. In the meantime, Mr. Hunt waited in vain for the annual vessel. At length, about the 20th of June, the ship Albatross, Captain Smith, arrived from China, bringing the first news of the war to the Sandwich Islands. This ship Mr. H. chartered for $2,000 to land him with some supplies at Astoria. He reached this post on the 20th of August, where he found the affairs of the company in a perishing condition and the partners bent upon abandoning the settlement. To this resolution, Mr. Hunt was finally brought to consent. There was a large stock of furs, however, at the factory, which it was necessary to get to a market, and a ship was required for this service. The Albatross was bound to the Marquesas, and thence to the Sandwich Islands, and it was resolved that Mr. H. should sail in her in quest of a vessel, returning, if possible, by the 1st of January, and bringing with him a supply of provisions. He departed on the 26th of August and reached the Marquesas without accident. Commodore Porter soon afterward arrived, bringing intelligence that the British frigate Phoebe, with a store ship mounted with battering pieces, together with the sloops of war Cherub and Raccoon, had all sailed from Rio Janeiro on the 6th of July, bound for the mouth of the Columbia. Mr. H., after in vain attempting to purchase a whale ship from Commodore Porter, started on the 23rd of November for the Sandwich Islands, arriving on December the 20th. There he found Captain Northrop of the Lark, which had suffered shipwreck on the coast about the middle of March. The brig Peddler was now purchased for $10,000, and Captain N. being put in command of her, Mr. H. sailed for Astoria on the 22nd of January 1814, with the view of removing the property there as speedily as possible to the Russian settlements in the vicinity. These were Mr. Astor's orders, sent out by the Lark. On the 28th of February, the brig anchored in the Columbia when it was found that on the 12th of December, the British had taken possession of the post. In some negotiations carried on just before the surrender on the part of the Northwest Company and McDougall, that worthy personage gave full evidence that Captain Thorne was not far wrong in suspecting him to be no better than he should be. He had been for some time secretly a partner of the rival association, and shortly before the arrival of the British took advantage of his situation as head of the post to barter away the property of the company at less than one-third of its value. Thus failed this great enterprise of Mr. Astor. At the peace, Astoria itself, by the Treaty of Ghent, reverted with the adjacent country to the United States on the principle of status ante bellum. In the winter of 1815, Congress passed a law prohibiting all traffic of British traders within our territories, and Mr. A. felt anxious to seize this opportunity for the renewal of his undertaking. For good reasons, however, he could do nothing without the direct protection of the government. This evinced much supineness in the matter. The favorable moment was suffered to pass unimproved, and in spite of the prohibition of Congress, the British finally usurped the lucrative traffic in peltries throughout the whole of our vast territories in the Northwest. A very little aid from the sources whence he had naturally a right to expect it would have enabled Mr. Astor to direct this profitable commerce into national channels, and to render New York what London has now long been, the great emporium for furs. We have already spoken of the masterly manner in which Mr. Irving has executed his task. It occurs to us that we have observed one or two slight discrepancies in the narrative. There appears to be some confusion between the names of McClellan, McLennan, spelled N-O-N, and McLennan, spelled N-A-N. Or do these three appellations refer to the same individual? In going up the Missouri, Mr. Hunt arrives at the Great Bend on the 1st of June, the third day after which, the day on which the party is overtaken by Lisa, is said to be the 3rd of July. Jones and Carson join the expedition just above the Omaha village. At page 187, volume 1, we are told that the two men who had joined the company at the Maha village, meaning Omaha, we presume, deserted and were pursued, but never overtaken. At page 199, however, Carson is recognized by an Indian who is holding a parley with the party. The Lark, too, only sailed from New York on the 6th of March, 1813, and on the 10th we find her much buffeted somewhere in the near vicinity of the Sandwich Islands. These errors are of little importance in themselves, but may as well be rectified in a future edition. This concludes the reading of Edgar Allan Poe, The Complete Audio Collection, Volume 1. This book was read by Kirby Hayborn, Ray Chase, Donald Corin, Grover Gardner, and Cassandra Campbell. This unabridged recording was produced in 2016 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.